What would happen if a well-known Chicago news anchor quit his job to drive a car for Lyft? What if he captured the real stories of the real passengers who ended up in the back seat? And what would happen if he aired those stories in a weekly podcast? I'm Anthony Ponce, and I did that. So download Backseat Rider at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who got through the corn maze to get into the podcast studio to talk to you. I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a live edition of Rob Has a Podcast, BBOTT edition. Tonight, very excited because we are going to be joined by members of the LFC. Taryn is here, Brent is here, and I'm here, and... Yes.
Later, they were joined by their virgin king.
Here he is, the great Scott Dennis.
Yes, glad to be here, Rob. Thanks for hosting me.
His Majesty.
It's a dark day in the Virgin Kingdom, isn't it?
Yes.
Dark days.
All right, so we're going to hear, we're going to talk with Scott. We're going to take your question, hashtag RHJP. Let's also welcome in the LFC members. Of course, that Scott had one request when he came on tonight that this man join us. Brent, welcome up. Brent, how are you?
As he should. We have our Virgin King. I'm the BB Queen. And of course, Taryn is the court jester.
Yes, the jester. Jester, Biscuit, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not sure what we're doing here. I thought the season ended yesterday.
Come on. All right. So we got a lot to talk through. The season does not end in reality until 1 week from Thursday, December 1st. That is going to be the finale of BBOTT. But we're going to talk through everything going on and get Scott's take on everything. Hashtag RHAP to get your questions. We'll be taking your questions later on in this show. So very excited about all of that. And for you guys who have not been following BBOTT and want to get in and see how it all plays out, we do have a coupon code for CBS All Access, 1 month of CBS All Access. Scott, right? Get in while the getting's good, right?
That's a great value.
Yeah.
Free doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. If you want to use our link, BBOTT now, that'll get you 1 month of the CBS All Access for free. All right. So, Scott, we have so many questions for you. What has life been like since you've gotten out of the Big Brother house?
It's been good. I mean, obviously, I want to get caught up on a lot of things that, you know, I didn't see in the house. But I went back to work last week, you know, back on those phone calls, and things have been going good.
Yes. Okay. Very good to hear that. For those of you guys listening to the podcast version of this, Scott is wearing a Survivor buff. What buff is that?
This would be Angkor.
The Angkor tribe. Wow.
Second chances, right?
Yeah. And you also have a Survivor. Do you have a second chance mug also? A San Juan del Sur mug.
Yeah, San Juan del Sur. I love that season.
Did they let you walk past the Survivor closet on the way off the CBS lot?
No, they didn't, actually. Super disappointed, but okay. No.
All right. And Scott, you were coming to us from your house. This is your bedroom, the King's Lair.
Yes. The throne room, absolutely.
Okay. All right, Scott, so very excited to talk things through. I'm sure everybody wants to hear your reaction to the latest news of yesterday, where Jason ends up winning the veto, almost ensuring 100% that Shelby will be the person who goes home on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's a sad day. It's a sad time to be a ball smasher, that's for sure.
Yes.
We're still holding out for Morgan, though. Morgan can do it. Don't give up on her.
Okay, we're not going to give up. Brent, I'm sure you must be fired up and ready to go as well about this.
Well, yeah, it's not. Look, for those of you who have tweeted me on Twitter, it's not that Morgan and Shelby lost the final veto competition of the season. Okay, that's not it. All right, I was actually napping when this was going on, but I saw the initial competition and I saw what the rules were. And I was like, this can't be it. This is not of the caliber of a final veto in Big Brother. No, it's supposed to be Big Brother over the top. So it's supposed to be even bigger and better than normal Big Brother. But Rob, it was such like a wet fart. It was just terrible. I mean, like, people have been studying all season. They know the evictions, the votes, the order, the head of households, the veto winners, males, females, everything. everything you're supposed to know in Big Brother, everything Big Brother wants you to know, even the little stupid sayings that Big Brother wakes them up at the beginning of the day with that most of us don't even get to hear in a normal Big Brother version. And still, none of that came into play here. You know why? Because they had to dumb it down so that everybody had an equal shot at winning. Honestly, I feel like this is so like current for 2016. You have two people, one who knows a lot, one who doesn't know very much at all. You don't want to appear to be favoriting one side or the other. So you say, well, we'll make it so simple and so fair that no one can accuse us of playing favorites. But in doing so, you actually advantage one side over the other. So that's my complaint.
Okay, you feel like we lowered the bar here, Brent.
So far, what the hell does 3 years of corn in a maze have to do with shit?
All right, settle down. You're getting too worked up already. We're only a couple minutes into the podcast.
Rob, Scott, please Dennis, tell me.
Scott Dennis, that you're a Big Brother historian. What was your take on this final five veto?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a competition like that at any point in the season, let alone down to the last veto. You know, you always expect the very last veto of the season to be like this huge mental comp with this web of like 13 questions, and you got to put everyone's face in the exact right position. And the competition takes like an hour or something for everyone to do. So it was a letdown.
In fairness, it did take an hour for Morgan to do it. Yeah. Taryn, do you have an opinion on this, or has your feelings already been represented?
I mean, I get the outrage because the outcome that people didn't want to happen happened, but I don't see anything wrong with the competition. Like, it was a lame competition, but they've had plenty of lame competitions this season. I mean, like, the slack line was lame. Like, this was very similar to the haunted house thing where they had to go and they find three things and bring them back. So, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily out of character for this season.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that the contest was lame, but I didn't think that it was anything that was, you know, absolutely, you know, impossibly more lame than anything else in terms of even that veto that Jason won a couple of weeks ago of walk back and forth with, you know, carrying the balls across the balance beam. Just because it's not a big build, I don't think it's necessarily a worse veto than anything else. But let's just talk through the results of it, where Jason ultimately wins and takes himself off the block. Scott, when you came out of the house, I remember reading interviews where you talked about how you thought that Jason had played the best game of the season. I'm interested to know if you still feel that way.
I mean, I've obviously learned a lot of things since I've come out of the house, and I don't think so anymore. I mean, honestly, a lot of the biological warfare that went on in that house, I felt was pretty unnecessary.
Yes.
That might be a cause of like the lack of a jury. I mean, obviously, if you don't have to worry about jury management, then civility just goes out the window. But I don't think so anymore. I mean, at the time I did, but especially after that fake Final Five deal that he made, which was just to really, you know, rub the girls' nose in it, you know, to really just drive it home. Hey, you guys are going home. You don't have a chance. I just thought that wasn't, I just didn't think that was very appropriate gameplay.
So what I'd like to know from you is that who do you feel like has played the best game of the people that are remaining?
I mean, I got to say Shelby, because like, I had no idea that she was like a lawyer, right? Like, I totally bought into this whole bungalow persona Shelby. I mean, I was always saying like I wanted to bring Shelby really far into the game because I wanted her to get some money to put herself through community college. And I just totally bought into the whole persona that Shelby was putting on. So, I mean, for her to pull that off as well as she has, I think I got to give it to Shelby because she had me fooled and I think she had a lot of us fooled.
But if Shelby goes home on Wednesday night, then by default, even if you want to argue Shelby was better than Jason, isn't Jason the best of the four people that are left though? Or would you say it was Morgan?
I still don't know. I mean, I think Morgan's actually made an effort to try to strategize with the other side of the house. I think with the exception of Whitney, Morgan was probably the closest person to Justin. I feel like Morgan was really, really close to Neely, which is something I think a lot of people have forgotten about, was Morgan was making really good inroads with Neely and Chrissy until Morgan was forced to choose between me and Neely, and that sort of blew up her spot. But yeah, I feel like Morgan's been on top of the game socially, and I think Justin has as well. I think Justin and Morgan have both been playing fantastic social games, and in a season like this where it's so divided and it's so hard to like get any strategy going with the opposite side of the house, I think social game is what you really need to look for in such a divided house. And I think Justin and Morgan are the two that really exemplify a good social game this season.
Let me make a case though. I think that Jason should win the game. And I know that a lot of people feel like that he has made statements that are disqualifying, but can we not deny the fact that he three times this season needed, like, basically his life or the life of his allies were on the line, and three times he won the veto when his back was against the wall? Doesn't he have a resume that nobody else can come close to approaching?
I wouldn't say come close to approaching. I mean, sure, he's had some impressive competition wins. But I mean, I don't know. At the same time, I feel like his life in the game would have been a lot more in danger if it weren't for the fact that a lot of us were afraid to even say his name. It was almost like, you know, he who shall not be named, right? Because as soon as you put that out there that you're targeting Jason, then you're going to be on America's hit list. So I don't know. I felt like there were a lot of situations where we were just afraid to go after Jason because of the backlash from America, especially when Monty targeted Jason that very first week and Monty was put up the very next week as America's nominee. Obviously, I don't know why exactly America nominated Monty at the time I was in the house. So my number one assumption was just that America wants to go after Monty because Monty went after Jason. So at the time when I was in the house, that was my assumption. And that's why I was really afraid of targeting Jason because of the America backlash.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the worst part of all of this with Jason was that I really do feel that he has played a very strong game in terms of he won competitions when he needed to win competitions. He made relationships. He's with people that want to take him to the end. I mean, that you're wearing a Survivor buff. I feel like in a lot of ways, this is similar to Boston Rob Redemption Island, where, you know, maybe he's got his fill up and he's ready to go to the end. That's why I feel like that it's such a shame that all of these negative comments that he's made along the way have taken away from this. This is a guy who came in with so much goodwill on the part of the fan base, where it was probably 90-10 of people saying, oh, I'm voting for Jason over the Messiah. And in fairness, I said, hey, vote for the Messiah because he's better TV. But I feel like that it's a shame that Jason had so much goodwill, and he's turned a lot of people, I think, that voted for him to go into the house into never Jason people. Brent, what do you think of that?
I'm not never Jason yet, but I'm close. He's acted like a bit of an entitled bitch the entire time, and I don't mind saying that. I mean, look, I'm just going to put it out there. Jason reminds me of me from 15 years ago. Like, he's a trashy little boy who likes to talk smack about people, hasn't really done anything with his life, and he kind of expects the world to come and save him. So that's my take on Jason. And I feel like he kind of lets his mouth run, and he lets it run to a point where his ass isn't going to be able to cash those checks. So I voted for Jason. I wanted to see him go into the house, liked him initially, supported Scott's move. We're going to talk about it week one of getting Cornbread out and helping Jason's side of the house a little bit. But by week three, I was totally off that train because Jason and his the way he talks about women and other people in the house with such disdain is just something that I think is unbecoming of a Big Brother winner.
Scott, I would love to hear you talk about that. Do you feel like that Jason set the tone in the house for a lot of the nastiness that's gone on this season?
I mean, yeah, I do. I feel like that obviously being the returning player, a lot of people on his side were obviously looking up to him as sort of like guidance on how the game should be played, as it were. And they obviously crafted him as their leader, right? So, I definitely think that a lot of them sort of follow Jason, and, you know, they say mimicry is like the best form of flattery. So I feel like a lot of people were really kissing Jason's butt and just sort of following the Jason train on a lot of the comments that were made this season.
Yeah. It's been interesting too, because the bad blood in the house, I think, has really continued for people that are outside of the house, which I feel like is uncommon in a Big Brother season, even for people who I think during a regular Big Brother season, like the pre-jury, I feel like are not as, like, it's such a polarized season that do you feel like that things will ever get better between the two sides of the house? Like, do you think that there will be a point where 2-3 months from now that Jason and Shelby will be friends after this is all over?
No.
I mean, come on now.
I mean, I don't know if you saw like Danielle's reality recaps, but she was complaining that nobody from our side had reached out to her yet. And I sent her a follow because I was going to send her a private message that was like, you know, good game. You, You had a really good physical competition game. You had a really good strategy game. Mm-hmm. And what she chooses to do is block me and accuse me of creating fake Twitter accounts to troll her, which is like, I mean, I'm back to work. I'm living my life. Like, yes. I'm not bothering with that troll account.
Scott, stuff. If Danielle is listening,
I just want to put that rumor to rest.
Yes. Why don't you reach out and say something nice about Danielle?
Well, I tried, but I was blocked. So.
Well, I'm unblocking you. You could say something nice about Danielle.
Danielle, you had a really, really strong physical competition game. You had really good strategy going on. I don't regret keeping you over Shane at all. I still think that keeping you over Shane was the best move because I think you were much more strategic and willing to consider the options. Whereas if Shane had stayed in the house, he would have been foaming at the mouth to take me out. So I don't regret keeping you at all. And I think you played a good game.
Okay. That's a start, right, Brent?
You know, it is a start. And Scott has been like this since the beginning. I mean, he acted like this in the house too. When he was evicted, he said, you know, he hugged everybody, said good game, everybody. He gave them the respect that they deserve. And I really don't understand why the Jamboree side of the house afterwards, Shane and Ely in particular, and now Danielle to a certain extent, have become so anti anything that Alex and Scott or anybody on that side of the house says. They won't listen to them. They won't engage them. They won't talk with them. I'm like, you all shared this amazing experience. It would at least behoove you to at least be civil with each other. If for nothing else, you're going to have to see each other in a few weeks when you go back for the finale. I mean, let's just try to be adults here. And it doesn't seem like they're willing to do it. I so wanted Jason to lose that veto competition yesterday, just so I didn't have to hear Neely and Shane and all of them talking about like, yeah, we won again. See, we won again. Like, shut up. We don't want to hear it. You know, well, like act like a damn adult.
All right. I mean, is it possible that maybe is this on the contestants or are there fans out there who don't want to see people like cross sides and get over the game? If somebody will people be treated as a traitor if they say something complimentary about the other side?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think a lot of this just came from the very beginning of the season. Like I said earlier, the fact that there is no jury, there's essentially no jury management. It's sort of like civility just went out the window pretty early on. And I mean, the divide this season was, I think, the biggest divide that we've ever seen in a Big Brother season. We're worlds apart, as it were. And
that's not, you have a San Juan del Sur mug, not worlds apart.
I just feel like I don't know, it was just I don't know, the two sides just couldn't seem to get along. I don't know.
Hey Scott, I have a question. My friend Stina Nitz on Twitter, I don't know if you read her or not, but she had this, and I told her I would ask you this, but I've also been wondering this. She writes this: do you know why America was able to evict their own nominees? Because a certain someone wanted to suck up to us and voted out a non-threat in week one. Scott killed their shot at an America-proof alliance. If you're a Plastics fan and you're mad at the outcome today, that's where this all started. So how do you respond to that?
I mean, the thing was that, I mean, I had no idea. I mean, I actually had a pretty good idea of why America nominated Cornbread. I mean, there were some things that he said that I just didn't agree with. There were just some comments he made in passing that I didn't agree with. There were some comments in particular he made about Shelby that really got under my skin. Because from the first week, I was really looking forward to, you know, me, Shelby, Alex. I mean, that was pretty much my core three the whole way through. Of course, I wanted Shane and Monty on the side as, you know, numbers. But yeah, I mean, pretty much from the beginning, I was looking out for Shelby and Alex. So, it's so hard because, you know, when you're in there, you don't necessarily see the divide so quickly. I mean, in a regular season, you know, you have 14 days to see where everyone's at. In this season, you have 6 days to figure out where everyone's head is at. And maybe I saw groupings that weren't really there. Like I saw Neely, Morgan, and Monty as a group of three. And then I saw Jason, Danielle, Shane as another group of three. And then there's like, oh, and Chrissy. So I guess four. And then Justin's sort of floating in Neverland. So, I mean, I don't really know. It was hard to say at the time because I was trying to play the middle. I was trying to play both sides against each other. And I thought America was going to be a lot more unified as a voting block. So I thought America would pick off the weakest player from both sides. I thought they'd be like, all right, we don't like this person from this side. We'll take them out. We don't like this person from the other side. We'll take them out. And they would keep both sides even numbers and just get rid of the weakest people from both sides. Whereas America was a lot more divided than I thought they were. So,
well, I know that you were especially concerned about Cornbread because if you know, being the swing vote is normally an advantageous position, but I know during week one, you were concerned that if you are seen as the swing vote and the person who effectively keeps Cornbread can't be nominated during week two, you might go up. I think the thing that you missed, and maybe I missed too, because I was certainly supported your move to get out Cornbread because I didn't really care for him, was that it doesn't matter if you go on the block during week two. If American nominates you, that's not great, but that's still fine. As long as you have the votes to keep you, it's all about the votes this season. And I think maybe that's something that wasn't self-evident during week two.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because, I was just thinking I was really worried about obviously America swapping nominees between me, Cornbread. But also I was really worried about the fact that, Cornbread made it pretty clear to a lot of people that he really liked me a lot and he had a lot of respect for me. And I was afraid that if me and Cornbread were ever to find each other on the block against each other, the House would vote me out instead of Cornbread because they might see me as a bigger competition threat or a bigger endgame threat. So I was really worried about being potentially on the block against Cornbread because I thought, why would the House vote to evict Cornbread instead of me if I'm the one that everyone sees as like this rat character who's just flipping sides? And
it feels like to me like you wanted to play like a multi-layer, multi-version game where, you know, like with different worlds, different alliances, but in essence the House became a binary quality or quantity where it's always either or every week. There's really no in between.
Taryn,
something I take issue with is the idea that if Scott, you hadn't done this, that you would have had an America proof alliance. I don't agree with that at all. I think that between the care packages and America's nominee and America's eviction vote, maybe you would have lasted another week or two, but at some point you can't fight America on this season. I think we do have to blame the format more than we blame your move. And I disagreed with the move and I still do. But I think if we're looking at like, if we're upset about the ultimate outcome, I think we should be upset about the format, not the players, because there's really no beating the format.
Thank you, Taryn. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Scott, do you feel like that if you were playing in Big Brother 19 as opposed to BBOTT, you would have had a real shot to win this thing?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I obviously had some gameplay that wouldn't be condoned by a lot of people. I think I was a little too open with my information. I think I was a little too honest. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think I would have had just as good a shot as anyone.
Well, let's talk about that because I know a lot of people really got on your case about how dedicated you were to the Ball Smashers, whether or not they were also as dedicated to you. So in going back and watching that, I know you said that, look, Alex is my number one. Alex is the best. And I'll give up my game for her. But then upon watching all this footage, were you surprised to see that they were sort of, lukewarm in terms of the reciprocation to you?
I mean, I'm not even so sure about that. Like, if you go back and look at week four feeds, me and Morgan are on the block against each other and Neely's America's nominee. Morgan wins that Wall of Shame competition. And Alex actually asks her own sister to keep herself on the block, use the veto on me, because she felt like Morgan would have a better chance with America instead of myself. And for someone to ask their own sister to use the veto on me when their sister's on the block, I mean, I think that shows quite a bit of loyalty.
Brent?
I support Scott on this. I mean, like, that was actually an astounding moment. We kept waiting. You know, every time you cast sisters, anytime you cast siblings on the show, you always want to see, you know, is there a moment where they could actually turn against each other? Because remember, these two girls came into the house saying, you know, I'm willing to cut my sister to win the money. That's what they said right out of the gate. So here you go to week four. She has an opportunity where, you know, she's not going to cut her sister, but she's going to effectively put her sister in danger in favor of saving an ally who she sees as more precarious with America's vote and also somebody who the House might be more willing to keep.
I also want to add, while we're on the subject of Alex, will be our guest. Alex Willett will join us 1 week from tonight on Tuesday, the 29th, here on the podcast. So as we get ready for 48 hours away from the finale, we'll talk with Alex. Scott, how much have you and Alex been communicating outside of the House as sort of like the two members that are probably rooting for Shelby and Morgan to bring this home?
Oh, I mean, it's been a bumpy ride, but, you know, we're definitely, you know, we're staying in communication. We're texting a lot. But yeah, I mean, obviously with the way the season has been finishing up, it's been a rough ride to watch, Shelby and Morgan try to fight the world, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like Shelby and Morgan against the world. And it's kind of hard to watch, but, you know, we're, We're watching
Team Longshot,
supporting them all the time. Team Longshots, that's right.
Team Longshots. Could you talk a little bit about your decision to go after Danielle in the game? Because I felt like that it was certainly a calculated move on your part, where you basically said, okay, I'm going to try to get under Danielle's skin. I thought it really didn't play with America, and I thought it ultimately led to you being the America's nominee that week. But I felt like that you, when you were called on it by Jason, there was that moment where he's like, you know, why are you doing that? That's a horrible thing to do. And you're like, yeah, you know, it's just the game. It seemed like it was coming from a place like there was no malice towards Danielle. It was just that you felt like that was a calculated move, which did backfire. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was super, super desperate to stay over Neely. If I go home that week, then the Ball Smashers are down 4-5. So I was willing to do and say just about anything to stay in the house. And I knew it was going to come down to America's vote. I mean, there's 3 on one side to keep me, 3 on the other side to get rid of me. So I knew it was going to come down to America's vote. And I'm thinking if Danielle was literally America's nominee the week before, then maybe it's a good idea if I convince America that, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get her out of this house. I do definitely agree that I maybe got too wordy and I overdid it. But I think the core concept was all right. I mean, I ended up staying over Neely that week. So something, I don't know. I don't know how that happened. But
Scott, you were great. I mean, like, I didn't have a problem with it so much. I mean, from a strategic point of view, I thought you could quibble with it. But I thought that it was great from an entertainment point of view. I liked it. I thought you were fun to have in the house. Like, the reason we were all, that's the famous week where we were at the bar, we were watching, which it's between you and Neely, and we all cheered when you stayed. And the reason why at the time, if you go back and listen to our podcast, is it's not so much that we were anti-Neely, it's that we were more pro-Scott. Like, you were fun to watch in the house. You gave me something to root for. I felt like there was a part of myself in the house when you were playing, because you played in some ways very much like a feeder would play. I was aghast when Jason said, when he attacked you for going after Danielle, because you acknowledge that it's strategy. You're like, it's just a game, bro. And he's like, well, that makes it worse that you're willing to do that for the game. Like, if you had just been a personalized insult and you just actually hated her, that would at least be understandable, but you're using it for the game. I'm like, that's kind of where Jason totally lost me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a lot of hypocrites, right?
Hypocrites to the end.
But yeah, I mean, especially because, I mean, it seems like a better idea for me to tell America, hey, America, I'm going to pull out all the stops and go after Danielle, instead of saying maybe what my true feelings were, which is I'm just going to put up Jason and Justin and tell the girls to do whatever they want to do. Don't even tell me who you Ball Smashers want to vote out. Let it be a surprise to me who you're going to vote out. And I won't even know who's going home on eviction night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in this particular season, I think that it was a bad move to put yourself so out in front as a lightning rod for the other side to say, hey, this person is attacking our side. And I think that really galvanized the other side against you.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree, but I mean, I had faith, not that much faith, obviously, but I had some hope that maybe the Justin, Jason, Scott, Alex thing might bear some sort of fruit. But obviously, by the time they were willing to keep Neely over myself, I knew that the ship had basically sailed and that nothing was going to come from it.
Okay. So, I feel like in a normal Big Brother season, the house is pretty fluid, but this season the house was more binary and America was more fluid. Like, I know it seems like America has been anti Ball Smashers, but that's not necessarily true. I mean, we saved Alex. We gave you the care package. We gave Morgan the care package during the double eviction. We gave Shelby her care package, even though it didn't matter a hill of beans because all of her allies ended up on the block that week. But I mean, it's been a lot more 50-50 than I think a lot of people are willing to acknowledge.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing. Like, when I was in the house, I was expecting America to be more of this, like, unified, static voting block that, you know, that was in agreement on who were the better players in the house and who were the worst players in the house. And they would pluck off the weak players from both sides. So I was really surprised to see how divided the fans were this season.
Okay. Scott, in terms of watching the game since you left, what did you feel like was the biggest mistake the Ball Smashers made in your absence?
The biggest mistake that the Ball Smashers made in my absence? Probably Shelby claiming Whitney instead of Danielle for the one where Jason had the co-HOH and Shelby could choose to claim either Whitney or Danielle is her nominee. Mm-hmm. Probably Shelby not claiming Danielle and claiming Whitney instead as her nominee. Because that just puts Whitney, that just pushes Whitney further away from the Ball Smashers. And not to mention, I mean, if I have to put my money on someone to win a veto comp, I'm putting my money on Danielle every single time. So, yeah, I think that was probably the biggest mistake.
That week was a weird week because there were so many, you know, like you have to claim this person and that person can be the replacement and this person can be the replacement and you can name the new nominee. The bigger issue I had was Shelby going after Danielle during the final six rather than Jason, just because Jason is like a cult-like figure with Chrissy and Justin to a certain extent. And I feel like if you remove Jason from the block and somehow, keep Danielle in the house. Danielle, at least at times, has been a little bit transactional. She's willing to listen to ideas. She doesn't always agree with you, but she'll listen to certain ideas if she thinks that they would benefit her in the long run for the money. What do you think about that?
I mean, I would agree. I definitely think that Jason is the right target for that week, but I just don't think they had the votes because the cult of personality was just so far up Jason at that point. Like, there's Justin does. I don't think Justin trusted Danielle very much in that house at all. So I definitely don't see Justin voting out Jason instead of Danielle. I definitely don't see Chrissy voting out Jason instead of Danielle. And I don't think anyone would think America's going to vote out Jason instead of Danielle. So when there's only four votes and it looks so solid that three of those four votes, if you include America, are going to Danielle, I'm just not sure if there was anything Shelby or Morgan could have done to actually get Jason out of the house.
That's what we were saying at the time. Like, they should want Jason out, but there's nothing they can do to make it happen. Yeah. I personally thought I wished that Alex and Morgan had tried to separate themselves a little more. If Morgan had been able to infiltrate the other side of the house at the beginning of the game, that could have been something that could have really benefited the both of them. But obviously that wouldn't have benefited the Ball Smashers as a whole. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say just because the two sides were just really different. I mean, they're just different. They're very different groups, and I think that was reflected in the fan bases. I think if the two groups were similar and they could have gotten along, then we would have seen a more solid America voting block. But I think the two groups are just very, very different in their personalities, and I think that's what drove the big split in the fan base this season.
All right, so bringing it up to the real time, obviously we had our veto ceremony today, and we saw Shelby go up on the block in place of Jason Taran. Have you been disappointed with the lack of campaigning that Shelby has done?
I would say yes.
That your mentor, Dan Giesling, says there's always a way off the block where Shelby seems, much like in the maze, unable to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I would love to see, you know, some effort being put in. But I mean, this is a situation where, like, maybe Dan Giesling could get himself out of this. I don't see anybody else coming even close. Like, she has to essentially argue, like, vote Chrissy out over me. Chrissy, the ultimate final three goat at this point. Like, it's a really hard argument to make.
I mean, I think there's an argument to make. I think she could go to Justin and say, look, I think it's pretty clear that you're pretty popular. You know, I think that Jason and I are equally somewhat popular. I think your best bet at winning at the end, Justin, is to get to the final three with three people who kind of, or two people kind of split the votes and allow you to win with a plurality, like 40%. I mean, I don't know if that would fly with Justin, but I mean, it's something that she could say where, you know, if you take Chrissy to the end with Jason, all of those votes go to Jason. Where if you take Jason and Justin at the end, or Jason and Shelby, those votes are a lot more split up and somebody could win without a majority of votes. What do you think?
I mean, I don't think...
I would just like to see her try. She only needs one vote. I mean,
it would be nice to see her try, but it's just like it's really grasping.
I know.
Really no argument.
In a normal season, she might have a chance.
Yeah. Scott, yeah. Do you think that the eviction will be ugly tomorrow night? We've seen certainly some testy evictions, including some people getting on your case for clapping during an eviction, although you clapped when you got evicted as well.
Proud of it.
Yes. So do you think that tomorrow night will be especially tense?
I mean, I think Shelby might be planning to reveal her lawyer secret during the eviction ceremony tomorrow. And who knows how the L and J will take that. Maybe they'll respect it. Maybe they'll think she's lying the same way Morgan was lying about being Alex's sister. I don't know. Maybe they'll laugh in her face and call her a sucker. I don't know.
Okay.
If the past 8 weeks are anything to show for it, it's probably going to get ugly.
Okay. Here's what I want to know, Scott. So hypothetically, I know you're rooting for Morgan to find her way into the final three, and it's certainly a possibility. She has to win, you know, one of two competitions to figure out a way to get there. But let's just hypothetically say that she doesn't. Okay. And she doesn't end up there. And it's Jason and Justin and Chrissy in the final three. Who would you support in that situation?
If it's Jason, Justin and Chrissy, I'm supporting Justin. I mean, when you're in that house, I mean, Justin's social game is pretty much, I mean, I felt it was on point. I felt like he was spending a good amount of time with both groups. He had his inroads with Whitney, whereas I felt like Jason never really tried to make inroads with anyone on our side of the house. Same with Chrissy. Chrissy might have made a minimal effort with Morgan and Whitney, but I feel like Justin was the one who was really putting the effort forward to try to build relationships with both sides of the house. And I feel like in a season as divided as this, social game is what you're really looking for, because there's not a whole lot of strategy to point to.
I have to say, I'm really, here's the thing. I support what Scott is saying here. That's the thing that's making it hard for me, because I enjoy Jason from a, Jason is a Big Brother historian. He'll tell you that. He watches the feeds. He's like us. He loves Big Brother, knows everything there is about it, knows that, you know, who June Song was during, you know, season four. I mean, like he can pull all these things out of his butt. But on the other hand, he is a basically terrible person in his sort of like anti-woman, slut-shaming crap that he says every day and has basically said every day up until the day that he won the final veto here. It's just something that I find really tough to take. I mean, Rob, I don't see the difference between Jason and Polly, because they are essentially acting in a similar fashion that is repulsive to me. I mean, Jason willingly says the C word almost on a daily basis.
Yeah.
He talks about the size of Shelby's vagina and how many men she's sleeping with. I mean, he talks about the awful things that she does behind their back when she's at home, the gold diggerness and all that. And he talks about like dragging her family and setting a fire to her house and making sure he drags her family name through the mud when he gets on Twitter. So here's my question. Why does Jason get a pass at that?
Okay.
Is it because he's gay? Is it the same way that I get a pass? Like when I like hit on a guy, like on a podcast, if I was like the straight guy and I hit on a girl, I think people would say, oh, you know, you can't do that. But the fact that I'm a gay guy, I get a little bit of a pass for it.
Well, so let me speak to that. Let me speak to that. And, you know, I don't want to defend or condone, you know, the comments that are being made. So I think that where it comes down to a couple different things. One, Jason is a person who has a fan base, a very excited fan base, who will argue he doesn't mean these things that he's saying. He's joking. He's kidding. He's Jason. If you knew the Jason that we knew, you would know he's joking. He's not really going to do all of these things. And it's just a joke. You guys are being way too serious. Morgan said this. Shelby said this. So he's kidding around. He's joking. So I think that that's one thing where I think that for Pauly, he doesn't have a fan base. Even if Cody has a fan base, whatever fan base Cody has abandoned Pauly at some point. And there were no Pauly defenders that were out there, maybe one or two. So Pauly sort of became just like a public whipping boy where you could go out and say anything about Pauly Calafiore and you weren't going to get people on Twitter coming after you saying, how dare you? How dare you say all of those things. And I do think that there is a respect for the game that Jason has, even when he complains, even when he becomes full on grumpy grocer, that Pauly Calafiore, when he has a punishment that he wants to do, he isn't actually going to do it. And I think that you could have argued at points where he seemed like he was, you know, in a relationship with Zakiya and also not really being respectful of her at that time. Whereas it seems like that Jason is more talking crap in private about people, where Pauly is saying things to people's faces. But that being said, I just think it's such a shame that Jason has squandered so much goodwill for people. I feel like that Jason doesn't necessarily care about being seen as this person that you could look to as a great Big Brother winner. I feel like that Jason only cares about being a great figure to the people that like Jason. And if you don't like Jason, there's no outreach on his part to say, hey, I know that there are other people voting in this thing that did not support me, that rooted for Shelby. It's like he can't even fathom that there are people that are out there that even like Shelby or cared for the Ball Smashers this season. And it would be nice to see him sort of like in a private moment, reach out to the people who rooted for the other side. But instead, he just seems to have so much disdain and only wants to be a figure to the people that supported him. And to hell with everybody else. It's just he feels like that he can do it with his team.
That sounds so 2016, Rob.
But I mean, you know, but Brent, you make allusions to the election. But I wonder if the irony on all of this is lost on someone who's been in the House since the middle of September and really hasn't been so, you know, exposed 24 hours a day over the last 2 months. The only five or six people in the country that haven't been just electioned out over these last 2 months are these same people. So there is some, you know, parallels there with so much. I only cling to my viewpoints, and I'm talking about both sides here in the election, where people just, you know, don't even want to entertain anything that is said by people who don't have the same viewpoint as them. Scott, I'd love to get your viewpoint on all this.
On Jason or the political scene?
No, I don't care what you think about the politics.
Who is N Bone? Can someone explain that?
It's a long story.
I feel like if Jason had just been his old self, or even just like a watered down version of his own self, he could have had a pretty easy ride throughout this whole game. But I feel like a lot of his obstacles that he's had have been self-inflicted. I feel like he's built up a lot of ill will with anyone who's a Ball Smasher fan. I feel like he's built up a lot of ill will. Can we get a clip of like, I just can't catch a break or something?
Of course Morgan gets picked to play in veto because nothing ever goes my way in this game.
Nothing ever goes his way.
Yeah. I mean, right there. I mean, I think that burns a lot of people that see what's going on in the house. I mean, the late night jamboree has only won what, 3 HOHs this entire season?
Yeah.
And look at where we're at now. I mean, I feel like that, he could have just been pretty neutral and could have steamrolled this season. But a lot of his obstacles that he's been facing have been pretty much self-inflicted.
Yeah, I think the thing that's just so frustrating to watch this guy, and I feel like that we probably, if he could have gone through this season and been sort of like everybody, we all love Jason in Big Brother 17. We're all sad to see him go. My argument for why I said let's vote for the Messiah was that I felt like that he was going to be better TV. Jason wasn't really playing the game hard. I figured that, like, hey, he's fun on the feeds, but he's just going to sit around and smoke cigarettes. He actually came back and played very, very hard in this season. And I think that the thing that you could get on him for is that, did he need to do all of these things that he did, where we talk about the Final Five deal and the personal attacks and all of the stuff like that? I feel like that, and Ian Terry will tell you this about Big Brother 14, where the coaches were there and they sort of would set the tone for how people are to behave in this house. And I believe that Jason coming in, being the only returning player in the season, he taught people, he was the mentor to everybody in the house. And I think that this season is such a reflection of him, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I definitely feel like a lot of us looked up to Jason, especially that first week. I mean, I know I did. I really wanted to work with Jason. I mean, whenever there's returning players, the people that go against the veterans are always the first people out of the house. And you can only expect that to be amplified in a season like this. So, I definitely think a lot of us were looking to Jason for, like, maybe not necessarily guidance, but maybe just sort of as like maybe not necessarily a role model, but just sort of like a standard that was like, all right, this guy's played before. He knows what it's like post show. This is sort of someone who we're going to really, you know, keep an eye on and, you know, sort of model some of our own behaviors after.
Yeah. Taryn, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think it's interesting to look at Jason as a player in this game. It reminds me a lot of last season, actually, where, you know, it ultimately comes down to Nicole and Paul, And I mean, I was very vocal about the fact that I thought Nicole played a better game, but she had a lot of advantages going in that Paul didn't have. And in trying to evaluate what Big Brother OTT is as a game and what it takes to win, it's very difficult. And I think that ultimately I've landed on the fact that, yeah, Jason did play the best game, but he was also given, like, you know, 10 times the starting stack as anyone else. So it's very difficult to evaluate him on that end. What we can evaluate is what he did with that. And he did make a lot of mistakes, and he's definitely made a lot of mistakes as far as his, like, social game with America goes. We've definitely seen him lose a lot of fans. And, you know, that's unfortunate because I don't think it was necessary. However, I think that, you know, going back to the political discussion, I think we've found that, you know, making controversial statements is not necessarily a deal breaker for a majority of people. So I think that we're seeing him, you know, make some mistakes, but I still think that he's probably played the best game here because that's what this game is.
Yeah. And the problem with the political statements also is that, and this is true on both sides, where somebody says a statement that's outrageous and the one side is like, oh, can you believe that what they said now? And whether it's things, you know, that, you know, whether, you know, things that came out that Trump said or things in interviews that he said or in the debates, people on like, say, oh my God, how could you vote for this person? And the people who support him love it. And, you know, with Hillary Clinton, and she calls people deplorable. And then people like, oh, he called, can you believe what she said about this? And then, oh, why shouldn't she be allowed to say this? He said this. So I don't think we get anywhere. You don't convince or change anybody's mind by pointing to the disagreeable things that they said. And you see so much just on Twitter and on Reddit of like, hey, well, that he shouldn't win because he said this, or, well, that, you know, Morgan said this. We don't get anywhere, Scott.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely think there was a lot of pointing fingers and a lot of mixed stories this season. I mean, obviously, when Neely caught me in the bathroom saying I was going to make Danielle's, you know, last week a short-lived hell. And then, you know, Danielle and Jason get in a tizzy. And then a week after I'm evicted, they're saying the same exact thing about Shelby. I mean, yeah. What are you going to do, right?
The only thing that I'm going to do is, I'm not going to be hypocritical. And so I'm going to say that I think that Jason, that I don't agree with the statements he made. And I don't like how he's been on such a tear and been so angry this season when he has every reason in the world to be the happiest guy in all of Big Brother right now. And I would say that he's played the best game, but I don't think it was necessarily a fun ride to watch.
No, definitely not.
Well, you have to tip your cap and say, kudos to Jason. You were the one that you really ran this game. And every time your back was against the wall, you pulled out a win when you had to. And he should be the winner.
I mean, you could make that argument. I mean, I'm still giving it to Justin. If it's an all LNJ final three, Jason, Justin, Chrissy. I mean, I still think between those three players, I still think Justin played the best game. Whether or not he actually threw the comps, I'm not sure. But I know for at least like the week three veto, when Justin, the puzzle competition, when Justin picks to go against Danielle instead of Alex, right. Like that was huge for me. Like when Justin says, I'm going to compete against Danielle and let Alex have one of the vetoes, that was a huge trust builder with me for Justin. I felt that was one of the biggest moves he made in the season. And it was a really good one because not only did he secure himself a power of veto, he bought himself a lot of goodwill with the ball smashers. And whether or not he was actually throwing the comps, he acted to me like he was willing to throw the comps. And that's almost an even better strategy, is to tell someone that you're going to throw the comp and then actually bust ass. And if you don't win, then you can still say, oh, well, I threw it, so you're welcome.
But isn't it,
Rob? And yes, I can support Scott on this. Because, yes. Like, Justin, you know, watching him on the feeds, I have really begun to accept the fact that Justin could be the winner watching him, because he really wants it. I mean, it's not just something where it's a joke to him. You know, I think a lot of us early on had a problem with Justin because he seems like he's a bit of a joke and he doesn't really care. But I've watched him the past 2 weeks and he is all about getting to the end, winning, and making sure that no one else takes his spot to get there. So I could support a Justin win, although I am not necessarily anti-Jason.
And Justin, I thought for a while was going to ultimately win the game because I thought he had crossover appeal, but I don't necessarily know how he gets past Jason in the final three. I wonder if he was to potentially get Jason out this week, would that help him, or would the Jason fans just be so upset with him that, but would they dare vote for like Morgan or Shelby? If he was sitting there at the end with them, isn't that his best move to potentially win the game, Brent?
It is. Scott, I know you've seen this, though. Justin is cognizant of the fact that Jason is money hungry, willing to do anything to win, and doesn't really care about the other people around him. So I have to think that even though Justin's in the diary room and, you know, is outwardly talking to us as though it's going to be, he wants it to be an all jamboree final three, that he knows he can beat Morgan. He knows he can beat Chrissy. So I can't imagine there's going to be anything on his part helping Jason get to the end. I mean, Justin's best bet in my mind, if he can't beat Jason in a final three, is for someone, say Morgan or himself, Justin, to win that first part of the HOH competition, preferably Morgan, take Chrissy, and then it's Justin against Jason in part two. And, you know, I don't think that it's terribly likely. I think it's very likely that Jason makes the final three given where the season is headed. But it's Big Brother over the top. Anything can happen. And I think it would be hilarious to see Shelby and Jason go out, you know, final five and final four here and end up with the final three of Morgan, Justin, and Chrissy.
Yeah, nothing would make me happier than to see Jason go out next round.
I know, right?
But Brent,
obviously, I'm down for that. You know, even if Justin wins the first round, he saves Chrissy. And then we have like this epic battle in the second round between Jason and Morgan. And Morgan
That's probably the best bet. Yeah, I don't trust Justin to beat Jason. I do trust Morgan to beat Jason.
Okay, with these final four situations and scenarios that we have to talk about, there's a user on Reddit who put this all together, and this is from Wigsby Little Mix, who figured this all out of the potential eight scenarios that there could be for the final three from the final four. That in these eight scenarios, six of them, Jason will win. The other two, Morgan will win. There is no chance for Justin to win as the final four is currently composed. Taryn, have you seen this today?
I've seen it. I disagree that it's a given that Justin will lose. I don't think that Morgan necessarily wins if she gets to the end. We've seen that the Ball Smasher fan base has not been able to pull out a vote in quite a while. But you know, the other stuff is correct. Like if Jason gets there, I think he wins, and he gets there, you know, most of the time. So, I agree with that part.
Yeah. Scott, will you be publicly lobbying for, Justin to win if he sits there with Jason and Chrissy?
If it's Jason, Justin, and Chrissy?
Yes.
I mean, I might casually support Justin, but I'm not going to be like, guns blazing. Oh, we got to make sure Justin wins this season. Like, yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, the Jason train is there's a lot of momentum behind that Jason train, and it's going to be tough to stop him if he's in the final three with anybody.
Do you have any interest in a relationship as a friend with Jason when he gets out of the house?
We'll see.
What would need to happen? What would need to happen that you feel like that are you looking for an apology for anything from Jason, or any sort of like conversation about why a certain thing went a certain way? Or would you even potentially be the person to reach out to him?
I mean, I don't think I'll be the one reaching out. I mean, not to sound petty, but I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, if he comes in fourth place, then I'll definitely be, you know, a lot more open to it. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
I think a little time has to pass.
We have the receipts, and I don't know. I mean, it's a tough thing to say. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Not that I know Jason, but from what I know of Jason and from what he said in the beginning of the season and what he said after the season on Big Brother 17, I feel like he is the kind of person who he will recognize that he probably crossed a line in the season. He will probably apologize to some extent. And I do think that I'm not sure that we're going to see Jason right now in the middle of, like, after all this time on Big Brother OTT,
the heat of the battle,
with all the right. Like, I feel like that's a different Jason than we usually see outside of the house, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. And I feel like that if it's on you and you're the person to reach out to say, hey, that was an intense game. I didn't love, you know, how things went down, but, you know, kudos to you on the win. you earned it. Then if he doesn't want to continue, then you know that's not on you. You know that you were the bigger person, and then you can move on from there.
Maybe. I don't know. You're a better person than I am.
Rob knows his stuff. He's got a PR firm.
Yes.
You're a better person than I am. So we'll see.
You know, because I do believe that in these reality shows, you know, that we, as the people who watch them, we get invested. We want to see you guys go for it. But I think at the end of the game, like, I think we do want to see everybody sort of shake hands and move on. And everybody, you know, is able to sort of look back, you know, with some fond memories about what happened. I think that when it goes on years after the game is over, I thought that's never a good look on anybody, Scott.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm not going to be dragging him on Twitter or anything. It's just going to be, you know.
Will you make up fake Twitter accounts to follow him?
I'm not making fake Twitter accounts for anybody.
Yes, yes.
Like, I mean, I'm living my life over here. I'm back to work. I don't got time for that shit.
Scott,
will you be playing Xbox with him?
Yes, so you play Xbox with Jason.
I might play Xbox with Jason. I could see that happening.
And I will say really quickly, like, we've had Jason on Rap before. I mean, he seems like a pretty amiable guy when he's not in the Big Brother house. And we only got to see him for about 3 to 4 weeks initially.
Scott, talk about what's going on with you and Shane that even when you were in the house, Shane was very much on your case.
I mean I think he felt burnt that I wouldn't do what he wanted when I refused to vote out Monty. I think he felt burnt about the fact that I wanted to backdoor him. I mean, and when it came down to it, I mean, at the time it was just a game, and I just felt like you know, Shane would be the person that would be the least willing to compromise or deviate from what he was originally thinking. I felt like Shane had a more one-track mind when it came to the game. Whereas, you know, someone like Danielle, I think she was legitimately, considering keeping me the week she was HOH until Jason got in her ear and Jason said, "Hey, Danielle, America's serving Scott up to us on a silver platter. We got to take this or we're not being grateful to America." But I do think Danielle was actually legitimately considering keeping me in the house that week, whereas Shane would never have considered keeping me in the house.
I agree. That week, like, Danielle, she wanted to keep you. Like, you weren't even an option for her. She wanted to get somebody else out of the house. All of a sudden, Jason comes in, speaks to her for 5 minutes, and she's changed her mind. So, you know, every time I don't want to give Jason props, I think back to situations like that, and I'm like, God, he's got them wrapped around his finger. Well, like, he's like a cult figure.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely feel like, I mean, if Jason could wrap Danielle around her finger like that, he definitely could have done it with Shane. Because I think Shane would have been even less resisting than Danielle was. And if I had kept Shane in the house, he would have been foaming at the mouth to take me out if I had taken out Danielle that week.
I agree with that.
There's no way Shane would ever consider working with me if I took out Danielle. Whereas Danielle was considering keeping me around after I took out Shane, which was a surprise.
Okay. I want to get into some of the questions from the listeners. But first, Scott, any improvement in the love life since BBOTT?
Oh, you know, I've been busy getting back into work and the regular swing of things. But, you know, not yet.
Okay.
Scott, I wanted to bring up something really quickly. Before I forget, I wanted to ask you this or drag you a little bit before, because you know I love you. Like, you're one of my favorite players in this season. The one thing that I had a problem with was, aside from some of the strategic decisions, was when you got the vote over Neely and Neely was evicted and you were clapping and you were like making a big deal about it and Neely walked out the door and everyone is pissed off at you. Like, if I wanted you to keep clapping in Chrissy's face, like, totally let them have it. But instead, you did, like, the anti-Dan Giesling where you were, like, started apologizing, where you were like, Chrissy,
wait, hold
I would
on,
never
Brent,
have done
how,
that.
How are you killing Jason, and then you're telling Scott he should have gotten been clapping in Neely's face?
There's a big difference between clapping and calling someone the C word, Rob. Come on. Like, this is a false equivalence that I'm really tired of. Like, it's okay for Scott to revel in his victory a little bit. I just wanted a little bit more of that, and I didn't want you to immediately start apologizing. Like Dan Giesing always says, you know, you put the knife in, you twist it a little bit. Don't start apologizing once you do the move. That's just not what fans want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was really taken off guard when Neely, during the eviction speech, when she said that I was clapping at Chrissy's injuries.
Right.
Because that had totally caught me off guard. I had no idea Chrissy took it that way. I had no idea the other house guests were taking it that way. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, I have 60 to 90 seconds and I'm probably going to get I might get evicted tonight instead of Neely. And I'm going to have like 40 seconds to tell Chrissy, like, no, I wasn't clapping at your bloody hands. Like, that ain't me. Like, right. I wasn't aware you had gone yet in the competition. I was just trying to psych you out.
Was that your best moment on Big Brother Over the Top? Like, when you look back, like, is that the moment when you look back, like, yes, that was
when I stayed over Neely?
Yeah.
That was probably second best. I think the best was when I won HOH.
Okay.
That was just awesome. And then number two, a close second would definitely be when Neely got evicted.
I do want to quickly say that you might not have been clapping when Chrissy injured her hands, but I'm pretty sure that that was one thing that the majority of the audience got on board with. We were all clapping and laughing when Chrissy injured her hands.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some of these questions. I'm sure that we have a lot more to talk through. So let's take this first question. This is from Today Has Been Rough. Were you surprised by the intensity of the fans once you left the house? Yeah, Scott, when you walked out of the house, were you surprised at just to see how much the battle was still being waged on in these Twitter streets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought America, I mean, obviously when you're in the house, you don't know what America is thinking. So I'm obviously thinking of America as this sort of static voting block that's, you know, looking at both sides equally and is saying, okay, the best players from the late night jamboree are Jason and Justin. And the best players from the ball smashes are Alex and Shelby. So I wanted to work with all four of those people because I thought if I could sort of play the middle, then I wouldn't piss off either fan base. But then that sort of backfired and everyone thought I was a rat to both sides. So, I mean, I was definitely surprised at all the vitriol from the, you know, the fans out there.
Okay. All right. Let's take one from Randy K. Are we really going to have two returning vets win seasons of Big Brother in 2016? First, Scott, just to go back to Nicole winning BB18, how did you ultimately learn that Nicole was the winner of BB18?
I found out a day after I was evicted.
Oh, so the whole time. Yeah.
Oh,
so like, yeah, the day after I was evicted, I got to watch the finale episode of BB18. And yeah, that was another thing that was surprising, right? Because when you're in the house, you're thinking, okay, Paul might have won this season. Who knows? Maybe James won the season. And, you know, that means we've had six or seven seasons in a row that have been all male winners. So that was another reason why I thought maybe America hates this all guys brigade style alliance between me, Shane, Monty, and Cornbread. Maybe America hates the fact that, you know, there have been so many male winners in the past six or seven seasons, and they want to get this all male showmance out of the house. And, you know, that was a little reason why I thought about getting rid of Cornbread. I mean, obviously there were a lot of reasons I had to get rid of him, but that was a small one. I was afraid that maybe America didn't want to see an all guys alliance sort of try to run it to the end together because they wanted a female winner.
Okay. Let's do a question from Fabi. Did Scott Dennis think a guys alliance was actually a good idea, or did he know/feel that it was doomed from the start? Well, that's sort of on the same subject. Is that a big part of the reason that you just felt like that this guys alliance probably would have been hated by the audience, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had a feeling that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I didn't know at the time whether or not Nicole had won. And I thought, you know, obviously, people love all females alliances, you know, especially the strong ones. So, I mean, I definitely thought, like with the Fatal Five and Big Brother 18, there was a lot of hype behind the Fatal Five when that first started. And, yeah, I mean, I thought that there was a chance we could make it work, but, yeah, unfortunately, not this time.
I also think that part of this, and this is a something that was tweeted to me during this show about from Anthony, who wrote that, doesn't Jason know that the fans will always root for the underdog in the game? Watching Jason as the top dog isn't fun and good that do you think that, and we talk about this every season, especially in Big Brother US, Big Brother Canada, the audience always sides with the underdogs. And I think that that's part of the appeal of the Ball Smashers, who have really been underdogs for probably for most of the season. Is that fair to say, Brent?
The Ball Smashers, I mean, yeah, I think they've been underdogs. I mean, at least since, like, say, week 4, week 3. I know during week 3, I was campaigning for Scott to get the care package. I believe it was week 3 because I wanted to make sure that he had all the power that week, because I was really tired of seeing America just totally bulldoze that side of the house.
But I think it's an interesting point, and Gavin says the same thing in the chat room, that I think that Jason sees himself as the underdog. Scott,
he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott,
he can't catch a break.
He can't catch a break. Yeah, but it makes for an interesting disconnect where here's this person who is the Boston Rob of this season, but is looking at himself like it's me against the world right now.
Victims, aren't we all?
Yeah.
Thank you, Boston. It's
an interesting disconnect in terms of, like, you know, why we're seeing what we're seeing this season. Now, Fat Tyson Apostle says, do you think you ruined Alex's game, Scott? I know I've heard that where people, you told, hey, Alex is my number one, I'm not going to go ahead, I'm not going to vote her out, and that put more of a target on her back. Do you take any blame for that?
I really don't. I mean, honestly, I'm pretty sure the entire other side of the house was gunning after Alex before her HOH reign was even over. Shane and Danielle were definitely targeting Alex, right? Because she had nominated them together. So there was no way that I had anything to do with Shane and Danielle going after Alex. And then on top of it, Neely and Chrissy were both extremely pissed at Alex because Alex nominated Chrissy after I guess some sort of deal was struck where Chrissy would use her care package to save Jason and Alex would make sure that Chrissy wasn't put on the block. And that probably pissed off Neely more than it pissed off Chrissy, but it pissed off both of them as well. So Alex definitely had those four people gunning after her before her HOH reign was even over. I definitely feel like at least Jason and possibly Justin as well were definitely intimidated by the fact that Alex stood up there for 3 hours holding a sword against a crown. So honestly, I think if you were watching who everyone's primary targets were and like the live DRs and things like that, you would see that Alex was the primary target for almost everybody in the late night jamboree before her HOH reign was even over. And that's why I felt like I had to cut those deals. And I mean, let's be fair. I mean, a lot of these deals, I did approach Alex and I got her okay ahead of time. The deal I made with Justin and Jason, that was something me and Alex talked about for several days before I approached Jason with that. The short-term deal that I offered to Neely, that I would keep Neely off the block if she kept me and Alex safe the next week, that was something else I got the go-ahead from Alex before I made that deal. So a lot of these deals, I was getting the go-ahead from Alex before I even made them.
And Scott, yeah, keep going. I thought you were done. Sorry.
No, that's all right. And it's just like I was very well aware of the fact that there were pretty much 5 people, Jason, Neely, Chrissy, Shane, and Danielle, that were all gunning after Alex before her HOH reign was even over. And of course, I don't know at the time that she has a sister playing with her, but after watching her stand up there for 3 hours to win this HOH, then her HOH gets overthrown by America. I just saw her as one of the biggest underdogs in the entire series. So I wanted to do whatever I could to support her because we're both big fans of the show. We both, you know, we're both on the live feeds. We've been watching the show pretty much since it started. So yeah, I was going to do whatever it took to get her as far as possible.
I was just wondering about your, like, in relation to the house's perception of you and Alex, you specifically, you had this insane ability to just be honest with people. Like, you rarely told lies in the house. You just would be honest with them to a point where people were then saying, well, he has to be lying. Like, no one would ever say that right to our face. And it sort of made people uncomfortable to the point where it almost disarmed them. Like, was that a strategy that you decided to do? Or is that just the way you are and you can't be anything other than that?
No, it was a strategy of mine to go into the house and be like almost brutally honest with people and just tell them what I really thought, because I felt like if I ever had my back against the wall to the point where I really needed to tell a lie, that people would believe me because I've been so brutally honest and unexpectedly honest this entire game. If everyone has that perception of me that I'm this brutally honest person that's just going to say whatever's on his mind, then they'd be more likely to buy my lies when I actually needed them when my back was against.
I remember when you were talking with Shane, and you know, he's like, if this happens, would you vote me out? And you're like, yeah. And he was just like, what? Why, yeah. Are you lying to me right now? Like, what? Yeah.
That was probably a mistake. Yeah. That led to my basic, that was the end of me playing both sides, that conversation.
Yeah, because I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I was exposed to both sides. And then the very next morning, I was super paranoid and everything because the next morning was have-nots. And the have-nots were revealed as Monty Morgan Scott. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they put it in alphabetical order. So I could be America's nominee this week and I could be going home week two. And so that was really upsetting, obviously. And then I think that same day, it was the same exact day, Obviously, Monty made a comment about Justin's clothes, if you remember that. Right. And so then Danielle goes to Justin, tells Justin the comment that Monty said. But the thing that was really messed up was that Danielle and Shane tried to pin that on me. Like Danielle and Shane were telling people that I was the one who went to Justin and told Justin the things that Monty was saying. And that was a big, you know, red flag for me that, you know, I can't trust Shane and Danielle. They're making these moves and they're stirring the pot between Justin and Monty, and they're throwing my name under the bus as the one who's stirring up the trouble when they're the ones that are going to Justin and mixing things up. So that was another reason why I felt like it would be very, very difficult for me to work with Shane and Danielle.
Okay.
It was a really interesting phenomena that, you know, you being so brutally honest, because we were watching you do it so often, and it had this weird effect where people, I guess they didn't like what you were telling them a lot of the time. And so they almost saw you as more deceptive than you might have otherwise been. It was very interesting because you were being so honest with them, and they would come away from that conversation being like, man, he's so shifty. It was really interesting to watch. I'm obviously not to your benefit, but thank you for providing that sort of interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. And I don't know if you're caught up on Survivor this season, but I think we've seen sort of a parallel thing going on with Adam where, you know, the line was said this season about the truth works well in this game. But I find more often than not, it's maybe like the 0.7 truth really works best in this game. And the complete truth is going to get you in trouble almost as much as lying all the time is going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, I probably could have kept some of those comments I made to myself and not volunteer so much information. That's for sure.
Okay. Let's talk about what John Densford has to say. Knowing what the format of the game is now, would you have held out for a shot at BB Propa? Scott, I don't know how much you could talk about your casting experience, but had you been through casting at all for Big Brother Propa, or was this sort of, Big Brother OTT came out and then you separately applied for that?
No, I've been applying since season 15. So I applied for 15, I applied for 16, 17, 18. And then this fifth time, BB Untitled, I just signed up for that. And it was a half a miracle that I made it on.
Right. And I can answer this question. Like, I mean, come on. Like, you're really going to say, like, you're a nobody in the middle of America, just like me. And you're going to say, no. Come back to me in 6 months. I'd rather have something else. So you come back to me and I'll take that instead. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. Like, if they offer you a gig, you got to take it. Come on.
But how much did you know the rules, how this was going to be different before you played this game? Or did they sort of like break it to you in casting of like, okay, well, this is a season of Big Brother. It's the Big Brother house, but it's going to be pretty different.
No.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't tell anything.
I was going into this thinking it was going to be like pretty standard Big Brother. I mean, obviously there's twists every season, Battle of the Block, MVP, what have you. But I had no idea going into this what was in store for me.
Yeah, Rob, how quickly we forget. Like, Taryn and I were all excited about this when they first announced it because we were like, okay, there's no casuals watching. So it's going to be just the feeders, like people like us. So I'm sure it's just going to be like straight up like Big Brother 10, like, you know, old school stuff. Like, this is exactly what we want. When not so much.
I will say I was almost convinced into applying for this season because, I mean, just, you know, why not? Why not try
this
it?
This kid, I had no idea.
Yeah. But I was warned. I was warned that it was going to be a little different. And I was like, maybe not. Maybe I'll skip this one.
Yeah, I thought we established that you didn't even want to be on the show because you have to stay up late at night.
You've been dragging me for applying. And like, you see, like you were above it all. Like,
listen, it's Steve Moses. He's very persistent.
Okay, boy.
We love Steve Moses.
Yeah.
Scott, how would Taron do on Big Brother?
I'm sure he'd do all right. I'm sure he'd do fine. He makes jury, that's for sure. He makes jury.
Yeah, there you go.
I like the delay there. It was like crickets for a second.
Yeah. Boy. Okay. Allie wants to know, Scott, do you regret being so vocal about your alliances and targets in the game? If so, how would you have played it differently? I mean, we were just touching on that. So is there anything else in particular that you would have done differently?
I mean, I felt like after that like conversation we talked about earlier where, you know, Shane asked me if I would vote him out and I said yes. I felt like a lot of people in the house saw me as like a rat and a dishonest player. So I felt like if I could sort of cut these deals and also, you know, obviously include some of my alliance members in those deals, then that would maybe make me seem more honest and more willing to actually stick to the deal. Obviously, if I go up to Chrissy and I'm like, Chrissy, me and you final two, she's not going to believe that. I mean, I need to make a deal that is believable, and the only way a deal is going to be believable is if there's something in it for me. So that I felt like that by including some of my other alliance members in my deals, it would not only make my deals more believable, but it would just be a solid move for some of my alliance mates. As far as my targets, back to my alliances. I think I did a pretty good job of hiding my how close I was with Shelby,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I mean, if you have on one end of the spectrum, obviously. Me and Alex are cutting deals with Jason and Justin and other people. But then I feel like I did a pretty decent job of disguising my relationship with Shelby. As far as my targets go, not really. I mean, obviously I said a lot of things week four were like, I'm going to go after Danielle super hard. She's going to be my target. But, I probably would have gone after Jason and Justin. That would have been like, sorry, America, you got blindsided.
Sorry, America. I just want to ask one other follow-up question. Brent, if Taron was on a future season of Big Brother, could you be fair in your reporting of what he was doing on the live feeds, or would you just be dragging him the whole summer?
When has Brent ever been fair?
Right? I was going to say, when have I ever been fair to Taron? I don't know. I think that would be really tough. I mean, like, I think I would be rooting for him, but it's really, like, it's so interesting because I loved Jason Roy before this season. And it's like, that seems so long ago. So if like, if Taron went on the show, like, and also JP, when JP was on Big Brother Canada, like I was rooting for him to be evicted on the night that he was evicted against Godfrey. So, and I knew he was a patron at the time. It may be a little different with Taron because like, I've actually like roomed with him and spent time with him and talked with him, but I'm sure I would drag him some of the time.
Okay. Sometimes. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be disappointed if he didn't.
Right.
All right. Anne wants to know, what is Scott's favorite remix of his yoga room dance?
Probably the one that CBS put out, the one with the raining vetoes coming down. I mean, that was great. I mean, you know, just these little Photoshop vetoes coming down, raining from the sky. That was awesome.
Scott, I have a question really quickly. When they showed you the Justin Pizza song, how big of a difference was that in your, like, where you thought Justin was with America before that and where you thought Justin was with America after that?
Well, before they showed that clip, I already thought Justin was the most popular player in the house. I thought Justin actually had a bigger popularity than Jason did. So when they put out that video, it didn't really change my mind, but it sort of solidified it in a sense of like, yes, he's definitely one of the most popular players in here. But that was something I was already pretty certain of when I was in the house. Obviously, when I'm seeing the fan reaction at this point, maybe not so much, but when I was in the house, I pretty much always thought that Justin was one of the best and most liked players in there.
And I feel like he was for most of the season. I feel like that his popularity sort of waned, I feel like, over the last couple of weeks as he sort of like entertained flipping sides. And I think that at this point now, maybe he's sort of like stabilized. But I do feel like that there was a point where him and Jason were sort of just like neck and neck.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that for me, the part that where Justin started to lose me a little bit was during the HOH competition where he read the rules out loud and it said, put two names on each face morph. And he went and put one on each face morph. And like, he didn't even like, it was like he wasn't taking it seriously. And then he got disqualified, I think, in the next HOH competition with the laser. So like, I was like, I'm of the Dr. Will school of throwing competitions. But it seemed to me that he wasn't really throwing them so much as he was like really just awfully terrible at them.
Okay.
Let's do a few more questions with Scott. Edma wants to know, what was your first reaction to how the RHAP community wanted you to stay over Neely? When you first you had to have caught some of the clip of when we were all in New York and we were at the Survivor Know-It-Alls after party and a throng of people were cheering. Yes.
Yeah, that was the first video I saw once I got home, and it's still my favorite video. It's probably my favorite video to come out of this whole season, honestly.
More than the yoga dance?
More than the yoga dance, even. I mean, that was awesome to see, and I'm super super thankful, grateful, and blessed for that. So thank you, guys.
Now, Scott, do you like the nickname the Virgin King?
I think it's pretty badass, right? I mean,
were you surprised that the announcer started that?
Later, they were joined by their Virgin King.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, that was just like me saying that I was a virgin was just like some one-off comment I made during like day four, and I guess they just held on to it. Like, I don't know. I'll take anything, the anything king. I'll take it. I mean,
hey Scott, if you haven't, I don't know, have you seen all the rap shows? Because the rap show that we did, and I don't think I was on it, I was listening, because I wasn't on it because I was listening to it after the fact, where they said that comment and Rob heard it for the first time. He literally just keeps playing it over and over, and Taryn and Alex are just falling out of their chair. Like, it's like one of my favorite podcasts of the year. Like, if you haven't seen that, go back and watch it.
Oh, I have. I've seen pretty much all the podcast this season for RHAP, besides
good stuff, Rob.
Yeah.
This last week. I don't think I've seen this last week's podcast, but I've seen all the other ones.
Was there anything that we said that we really got wrong in your estimation?
I don't know. Jordan endorsing me instead of Chrissy that week. Yeah. I don't know.
What the hell? I took him to task for that.
I know you did, Brent. Thank you.
Get this on the record. So Jordan said that you should go home over Chrissy?
Not sure if he said I should go home. He said it was a joke at the time, right? He was like, oh, I mean, I could say that I officially endorsed Scott and it still wouldn't change the votes.
And okay. He was trying to like take the opposite tact in what I said. So I was rooting for Scott. So obviously he was like, well, I'm going to do the opposite thing. Taryn, who was the HOH that week? Do you remember? Like, I think was he like you and he wanted the HOH to get their way? No, and I was like, that ship has sailed. That ain't happening.
Yeah, he wanted to prove that we didn't control America's votes.
Oh yeah, people were saying,
oh yeah,
people,
that was the thing.
Right, that's right, Scott. Yeah, people kept saying that rap is controlling everything. This is right after Neely got evicted. People said, does rap have too much power? I'm like, as if, yes. If only.
Say what?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But Scott, that no person, no woman viewer of this show has reached out to you and slid into your DMs since this all started.
I've got a couple DMs.
Okay, a couple. BB Snooze wants to know, if Morgan ends up in the final three, is there any scenario the late night Jamboree fans split the vote and she wins? All right, so let's talk through this scenario, which I think is interesting. So we end up in a situation where Jason and Justin and Morgan are together, that Brent's shaking his head no there's before no I even finish the question.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to stop you, but there's no scenario where Chrissy doesn't end up at the end, Rob, because Chrissy is going to be taken by all three people who are currently in the house. Morgan, Jason, and Justin will all take Chrissy, you know, if they win part one. And
Justin will take Chrissy over Jason?
I am convinced of that. 110%, 130%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, I like that theory. Like, it's Jason, Justin, and Morgan. I'm like, okay, Jason and Justin maybe can split the votes and Morgan can win. I think instead it has to be Justin, Chrissy, and Morgan. And people don't take Justin too seriously and Morgan wins the votes that way.
Okay.
Taryn, are you with me on this, or am I given?
I'm completely with you.
Okay, cool. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Let's go to Michael, Robin, Scott. Why did you spill your game to Chrissy in the hammock?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. It's sort of like, I mean, I had this strategy early on that I was going to be sort of balls to the walls and brutally honest with people, and I don't really care what they think, because if I have this sort of brutally honest approach, maybe that'll buy me some respect. And, yeah, I mean, at the time, originally it was just like, I wanted to, at that point it was like day 10 or something. And then the first week, like four different people came up to me. I think it was like maybe like Monty, Shane, Jason, and someone else. And they said something like, oh, you and Alex seem like you're pretty good friends, right? So I was pretty nervous at that point because I didn't want people to think that me and Alex were working together. So the way I presented it to Chrissy and Shane was, oh, I had to make a deal to keep myself safe so that way Alex wouldn't nominate me. So the deal I offered her was, if you keep me off the block and don't use me as a replacement nominee, you'll have my vote this week and I'll vote however way you want to. So I was thinking that that would A, make them think that I wasn't working with Alex that closely because I had to cut this deal, and B, I wouldn't have any future obligation to Alex and that this deal I made was just for week two. I'm still sort of, as it were, moving forward, but they didn't take it that way.
Okay. Let's do Jonathan Lewis, who says, why didn't Justin get more heat for taking Chrissy off since she wasn't in danger, but it was how Shane went up?
I don't know. I mean, it was what, like Chrissy, Neely, and Danielle? It was Chrissy, Neely, Danielle. So, I mean, someone had to go home. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, and Justin was obviously threatened by Shane because he wanted to be with Danielle. Remember that, Rob? So, like, he wanted to see Shane out of the house, out of all those four people, more than anybody.
Okay. Let's go to Robot Taryn wants to know, is the best way to play BBOTT in the future to not mention your target in public to prevent a backlash from America? Regular Taryn, will that change anything?
I mean, that is, I think, the optimal way of playing it. Robot Taryn is spot on. But I don't, will it change anything? Probably not. I mean, it's, I think this game is going to be very, very difficult to control unless you have a built-in fan base. Other than that, there's really not a lot that you can do to alter the outcome.
Scott, I agree with Taryn. It's like, it's not terribly practical. That's the thing. It's a great theory. Like I would love to have that theory and go on Big Brother and never mention my target. But the thing is, you have to talk with people. You have to let them know what you're thinking. So obviously your target or who you're thinking about, you know, who you are not friends with is going to come out of your mouth and people are going to be aware of that who are watching on the feeds.
Now, Scott, one thing that you said that really did get a lot of traction was that you mentioned in an interview that BBOTT2 was coming up in early 2017. Can you confirm that this was just something that you were talking about as a joke, or do you believe that there will be another OTT coming up before we get to BB19 proper?
I am ready to put this rumor to rest, and it was just a joke.
Just a joke. Right?
It was hyperbole. Yes. I was just being extreme for, you know, to make the joke land. And I guess the joke didn't land very well because a lot of people seem to take it pretty seriously. So, you know, no, I have no indication or inkling that there's going to be a BBOTT2 in January. I kind of doubt it. But yeah, that was just a one-off joke.
Scott, would you come back for BBOTT2 or any future season of OTT or even BB proper? Like, would you come back for anything? If they said, Scott, please come back, would you come back?
I would never say no to Big Brother.
Okay.
I mean, I've been watching this since I was 10. So, of course, I'm always going to jump at the opportunity, especially if it's BB proper, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. Right. So let's just go and fast forward a week now to the finale, where now it turns out that the cast of OTT is going to be brought back together for the finale. And surely there will be some fireworks. But do you have any sense of what the finale is going to be? I don't know if you can even tell us anything in terms of what you expect.
I have no idea. They haven't filled me in on anything.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because they don't really do a lot with the, you know, previous house guests. There is no jury in terms of the regular Big Brother finale. And it'll be interesting to see what this show is going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, especially because, you know, a lot of the finales recently have been, you know, almost more than 50% of the final three that are still in the house, watching them get narrowed down to the final two. And then when it comes down to the jury questions, it almost seems sort of like an afterthought, you know, like once the jury members ask the final two their questions, it's sort of like, well, most people already have their mind made up. But yeah, I think the jury questioning is going to be very interesting.
Well, is there going to be jury questioning?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. And I'm hoping that maybe Alex Kidwell can put a Twitter message out to Dr. Will to see if he'll come on the podcast to talk to America about what criteria they're using to make their decision.
Well, I know that they said that they're going to have the final three make their pleas. Like, I mean, I know that's I don't think that's going to be a part of the finale, though. That seems to be something that they're going to do before that, right, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that once they narrow it down to the final three, then, you know, they're going to make their plea, and then America will have 24 or 48 hours to vote on the winner.
Yeah, it's so funny. You know, Taryn,
they have to give the voting public some sort of time.
Yeah, right. Taryn and I have been talking about this since we started covering Big Brother, how, you know, we want Big Brother to go back to the way things used to be, where, you know, it's the final two or the finalists in the house. There's nothing to be done on finale night except reveal the votes. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. Finally, we get what we want, but it's a final three and it's on Big Brother OTT. So, and there's no jury.
I will say, I actually like thinking about this idea of having like a jury question kind of thing. I love that idea now that I'm thinking about it, because like, why not have them in there, like during the plea time, have the evicted house guests come in and question them about what happened.
That'd be
great.
They
can reveal stuff that's happened during the game. Like, that would be amazing to see on the feeds.
Right. So you want to have maybe the whole cast comes out and like Cornbread has a question for the final three and you really put them through their paces and, you know, nail them to the wall on some stuff. And then, okay, America, the decision is up to you.
Yeah. Go it would be like a reunion show in the finale. It would be amazing.
Oh, it would be so contentious, Scott.
Yeah. I don't know if we're ready for that yet.
Yeah, I don't know if we're ready for that.
Why it would be amazing.
I wanted to tell you something really quickly, Scott, while we have a chance and while everybody's watching. If you are someone who is, and I'm not proposing this necessarily, although I'm going to have to get on my horse really quickly here based on what I'm saying. If you're somebody who is anti-Jason and you want Justin to win the game, like you think Justin's played the best game, I don't think you can really have a laissez-faire kind of attitude about it. You can't be Kayser Asara. Like, you, I feel like if we're going to do it, we have to get together and get that thing going and do it. Like, it can't, it's not just going to magically happen. So if we want Justin to win the game, yeah.
Just reading between the lines. You're saying if you are never Jason, then you're saying that you have to start to rally around Justin.
I see. I think so. I mean, I really don't. I mean, obviously if Morgan's there, that might change things.
Does
I'm waiting
the
to
Justin
see how
fan base.
Out.
Okay. So let's just talk this through. Okay. Does the Justin fan base need to disown the never Jason crowd? Should they disavow never Jason support?
No, I think that they can coexist together.
You're saying that Justin fans should welcome never Jason support?
Obviously. I mean, that would help Justin more than anything, because I think Justin's likely to end up in the final three.
Should the Jason fans disavow Justin fans who don't disavow never Jason fans?
Rob,
you cannot have it both ways.
I'm back 30 minutes ago. I don't know what you just said.
Okay. I think
there's a lot of disavowing going on there. Yes. I think they can't afford to disavow anyone because they're already way behind.
Okay. So you think that the Justin support needs to welcome never, they need to put out an olive branch to the never Jason fans.
Oh yeah, they need to put an olive branch out to they need to be wide open for any comers. They need to be very, very open and welcome. Yes.
All right. So should the Justin fans begin trying to court Scott Dennis?
Yes, they should.
Should they welcome Scott Dennis be a keynote speaker at the pro Justin convention?
Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Pending Morgan's elimination.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, pending Morgan's elimination, which I think she could still make it to the end. So we'll see here.
It'll be interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. John Densford, do you believe BBOTT is inherently biased towards returning players, or will future players try to solve this? Scott, I know that there was a lot of talk in the week one, Jason back against the wall. Monty says we got to get Jason out. The house ultimately ends up keeping him in a future returnee season. You know, the first time we brought back I don't want to say the first time because that we had Stephanie and Bobby John come back and Stephanie got to the end and lost. Then Boston Rob comes back. But then the next season, Coach comes back and Russell, or I'm sorry, whatever, that people start to say, you know what, let's get rid of the returning players. Let's not deal with them.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, especially where, you know, you have a format where America's has such a big involvement, obviously, if you're already preconditioned to like someone or dislike someone, then that's obviously going to carry over into the their next time around.
Right.
Yeah.
Will there be a Jeff Kent of Big Brother that says that no returnee needs to win? The returnees have to go.
Oh yes, we need Jeff Kent.
But even with a Jeff Kent, there was still a returning player that made it to the end that season. I think that
we're not talking about him, Taryn.
Yeah, I know. I didn't name him. So you know, I think that anytime you see returning players mixed with new players, the returning players are always going to have a significant advantage. And with this format, it's going to be amplified even more. So I don't think that returning players work with the format for Big Brother OTT. Honestly, I don't even think that it works with the regular Big Brother. So that's how strongly I believe in it.
Yes.
Honestly, I go back to the beginning, like week one, when they had that veto competition and everybody's putting in their numbers. How different does this season look if Jason doesn't win that veto? Because Danielle had all the correct numbers. She just didn't have them in the right order, or supposedly didn't have them in the right order. Sorry, you got to take off my tinfoil hat. It would have been such a different world without Jason in, and if he would have been eliminated during week one. But oh well.
Yeah.
What could have been, Scott?
Scott, that if Shelby is evicted on Wednesday night, upon her leaving the house, do you believe that she will disavow the support of Adam Pock that he's given to her all season?
That was where it all went wrong.
Almost definitely.
It really was, Taryn.
All right. Jared Goodman, do you believe in the first one in the house curse? You do, Scott, right?
I mean, it's not a matter of whether you believe in it or not. I mean, it's factual, right?
Taryn? Taryn,
to the contrary, please.
Take it that even you, that a man of science, do you believe in the first one in the house curse?
Well, no, but
all right. Let's do one last question. Stephen H, Dr. Will, Dan, or Chrissy, who's the best puppeteer, Scott?
Oh, definitely Veronica, right? Veronica from season 16.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Give it to Will.
Okay.
He's the OG, right? He's the grandfather of this game. Let's give it to Will.
I think you're really sleeping on Chrissy Levasseur here.
All right. Well, lots of fun stuff here with Scott. Scott, any final thoughts? Anything that you like? I'm sure that you with all, there's so much vitriol online that I feel like that you must feel like in some way, like maybe misunderstood. Am I reading that incorrectly?
No, I mean, I don't think you're reading that incorrectly. I definitely think some people misunderstood where I was coming from for a large portion of the game. I mean, obviously, there were some people in my alliance that I was very open about supporting, but it's because I knew they were a big target for four or five people on the other side of the house. I mean, obviously, if Alex is the number one target for four or five people, I'm gonna support her because she was the one who supported me during her HOH reign. I don't think getting rid of Shane was a mistake. I could see the cornbread thing kind of, but I mean, when you're in that moment and you don't really see the divide as clearly as you should, you know, it's a lot harder to make that judgment call on cornbread. I don't think the Shane decision was a mistake. I still stand by that. Danielle was a lot more open and strategic to keeping me than Shane ever would have been. And, as far as Jason is concerned, I could have backdoored Jason. I mean, obviously the numbers were there, but where I just come off from being a have not, I'm HOH now. America gives me a care package. I feel like I'm finally on like the upswing in America's eyes. So I didn't want to burn America like the second that they gave me a care package.
But to the people out there who, no matter what you say tonight, are going to come away with the, I still don't like Scott. I don't care what he has to say. What do you say to those people?
Don't follow me if you don't want to follow me. I don't really care. I mean, honestly,
no olive branch.
I'm not making any fake accounts over here. So you can just stay on your side of the fence and I'll stay on mine.
Okay. Rob, I mean, I feel like Scott's olive branch was in the house. Like Scott made it clear that he was playing a game. It was everybody else like Neely and Chrissy who have personalized this to a point where they don't feel like they can even listen to anything he says. They just dismiss it out of hand. So I don't think it's incumbent upon Scott necessarily to offer an olive branch. because he's already done that.
No, he still should. He still should. And that people, because then he has the high ground, because then he can say, no matter what, like, look, I have no ill will, I have no animosity. If they want to be mad at me, be mad at me. That's it.
I don't owe him anything. They didn't do me any favors in that house, so I don't owe him anything.
Okay. All right. Scott, very nice to talk to you. I thought you were very fun on the show. I liked you. I thought you were a fun character in this season. And it didn't work out in terms of the game, but I thought you brought a lot to the show in the 4 or 5 weeks.
Thank you, Rob. I really appreciate that. That really means a lot coming from you.
Okay. I do hope that in the future you'll come on and talk with us, whether it's Big Brother Canada, Big Brother Proper, Big Brother OTT2, whatever it is. We'd love to get your take on things.
Oh, I'd love that. Absolutely.
Okay. The hashtag, the chat room is on. It has to be hashtag who is Ken Bone.
Who is Ken Bone?
Who is Ken Bone? All right, Brent. Any final thoughts in everything we talked about tonight?
No, I just wish that I wish most players from this season would have the attitude that Scott does, which is just like, it was a game. I had a great time playing the game. Yeah, I'm willing to come on and talk about my moves, not play favorites with who I talk to after the fact. I just feel like some people are still playing the game, and Scott has left the game behind. So I don't understand these people. I'm talking about Shane and Ely. I'm sorry, I just put it out there. I feel like they've been pretty immature, pretty much hypocrites, and they can't see their own hypocrisy through their own eyes. It's just, it's not visible to them, and I don't even think they care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta, the people in the house are playing the game, not the people on Twitter, unless you're voting 20 times a day, right, Scott?
Yeah, 20 times a day. I mean, if you can get in those votes before midnight, it's 40 votes, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Have you cast a vote since you've gotten out of the house?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're voting. Big time.
I've been voting for Chrissy as America's nom every single week. What happened? What happened to the Chrissy nom?
I will tell you, Scott, I would just tell you this, that the other live feed correspondent, Alex Kidwell, was just aghast over the fact that people would not nominate Chrissy over someone like you, who is actively trying to play the game, trying to strategize, trying to make bonds with other people. He was like, he made this whole impassioned plea rant, like I would, about, you guys complain about people like Chrissy all the time, people who won't strategize, people who just complain all the time. You have an opportunity to put her up, but instead you put up a guy who's literally trying to play the game and loves Big Brother, through and through. He didn't understand it. I don't understand it. So, on behalf of everybody, we're sorry about that. We did what we could.
But
thank you, Brent. I really appreciate it. I love going back and watching the podcast of what I had actually been through. And I thought you guys did a really great job. So thank you so much for the kind words and support.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks, Scott.
I do want to say that I think that you gave us, at least from my opinion, by far the most entertaining thing in the entire season. When you're talking about being in the BB streets for 14 years, whatever it was, and you are the mother effing debt collector, like that was just, that was just amazing. Was like that, you are truly a legend, Scott.
A legend.
That was great, Scott. Oh my God, we love that. I gotta go back and when I feel bad that Shelby's about to be evicted on Wednesday night, I'm gonna go back and watch that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, what if we have any listeners who are watching this podcast tonight, and then they want to reach out to you romantically, Scott? What should they do?
They want to reach out to me romantically. I mean, I don't know. I might make a Tinder pretty soon here, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, we're stepping up our game, right? So
do you know what that's from, Scott?
I think it's like the Charlie Day from like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
No, that's you from when you found out that Alex and Morgan were sisters with Julia Chen. Yes. Yes. Yes.
She's been playing this game with a sibling.
Love it.
In the house.
Oh.
All right. Well, lots of fun. And Scott, wishing you all the best on your trip to the finale. Hopefully no fisticuffs break out between the Ball Smashers and the Late Night Jamboree.
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
We'll keep it. We'll okay. keep it clean.
That's good. All right. So fun stuff. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Of course, that we will have all of our Survivor podcasting back tomorrow night when we get back into a Survivor Know-It-Alls with a 2-hour Survivor coming up. And then Stephen Fishbeck will be on after that, 10:15 p.m. Eastern. Do you guys know what the schedule is for Jordan on Wednesday night, Taryn?
I believe we're going to be on at 10:30.
Okay, something like that.
I think it's what he said. Somewhere 10 or 10:30. Yeah.
Follow at Jordan Parhar on Twitter to get the answer to that. And then, of course, then Thanksgiving on Thursday, but I'll be back with Tyson Apostle for our recap of the 2-hour show from Wednesday night. Of course, if you want to get in on the 1 month of free CBS All Access, if you are not already on it, it's BBOTT now. And we always appreciate it when you use our link in the sidebar of robinswebsite.com. All right, everybody, have a good night. Take care. Bye.